I was asked by George to come up to see him and talk to him about directing the third Star Wars. And I had next door to zero interest. But I always admired George. You know, George is a guy that does what he loves, and I do what I love. The difference is, what George loves makes hundreds of billions of dollars. So I thought I should go up and at least visit with him. And I came into an office, and there was George. And he talked with me for a little bit, and then he said, I want to show you something. Now, right about in this time, I started getting a little bit of a headache. So he took me upstairs, and he showed me these things called Wookiees. And now this headache is getting, you know, getting stronger. And he showed me many animals and different things. And I could hardly wait to get to home. And I, even before I got home, I kind of crawled into a phone booth and phoned my agent. I said, there's no way, I know no way I can do this.
Everyone, for today I'm actually joined with two very special guests for my 50th episode. We're going to be discussing Return of the Jedi in the alternate reality that David Lynch would have directed, and to see if he would have actually worked alongside with George Lucas as well, or any other factors. But before we get any further, I'll have the mic so they can introduce themselves further.
Brian Kazaska from Twin Peaks Unwrapped. Ben can't be here today, so it would just be me. So I'm very honored to be on today's show. Colin.
Yeah, and I'm John Thorne. I've got a long history with Twin Peaks and studying David Lynch, but I am certainly a Star Wars fan from the beginning. So I'm happy to be here talking about two of my favorite topics.
And because obviously all of us, we've talked about Twin Peaks at great length throughout the years, but also we've all been fans of Star Wars for decades. I guess we should probably give a framework of how we feel about the original trilogy, and more so what Return of the Jedi meant to us and how it was for us now, how it was for us then, and all the things in between.
Yeah, I'll go ahead. Before we started the podcast, I was talking to you guys about I was there as a teenager, very, very young, when the original Star Wars, before it was called A New Hope, it just said Star Wars when it came up. When it came out in 1977, I was there, and I think I saw it at the theater when I was a kid. Somehow I cajoled my parents. I saw it 10 times at the theater. I went to the movie, saw it, and so you know, I was the movie. I was the perfect age. I mean, George Lucas said at the time, "I made this movie for 13-year-olds." There's a quote somewhere. And I was 13 years old, so it was like my life with Star Wars.
The idea was simply to do a high adventure film that I loved when I was a kid with meaningful psychological themes. You know, it's hard for people to realize, and I'm not supposed to say this, and I wasn't supposed to say it then, but, you know, it's a film for 12-year-olds. It was designed to be a film like mythology of this is what we stand for. You're about to enter the real world. You're 12 years old. You're going to go on into the big world. You're moving away from your parents being the center focus. You're probably scared. You don't know what's going to happen. And here's a little idea of some of the things you should pay attention to. Friendships, honesty, trust, and doing the right thing, living on the light side, avoiding the dark side.
Yeah, the original trilogy, I still think, is probably the greatest of all the Star Wars. if, you know, I had to go to a desert island and I, you know, they said you can take all, you know, what you can take one part of Star Wars, it'd be the original trilogy for sure. I wouldn't take anything else. Though I like much of the other Star Wars. As for Return of the Jedi, I do love Jedi. I think of the three films in the trilogy, it's probably the weakest for a couple of reasons. That doesn't mean it isn't a strong film, a satisfying film. I think there's a couple things we could get into them, but even though I say it's the weakest, it doesn't mean in any way that it is a bad film. I mean, it is. I think it satisfactorily concludes the trilogy, particularly the Luke and Vader story is really good.
For me, you know, I was born in 79, so Empire and Return of the Jedi, I remember my dad, he was a huge Star Wars guy growing up, tons of Starlog magazines, Star Wars comics, Star Wars, a lot of that stuff from him. And then when HBO, they aired all three movies, I believe maybe Return of the Jedi was premiering on HBO, but they did all three back to back. And I remember it was a big night in my house because my dad brought out that he was going to record them all for me if I fell asleep. And I don't think I made it, you know, it went on to like 1 a.m. and I probably passed out in the middle. But Empire and Return of the Jedi are probably the two I watched the most, two of my favorites out of the three. And then when I was a teenager, John, like you, when they re-released in the 90s, they brought them all back to the theater. I remember going to my local theater when I was a teenager and seeing each one in the theater. And correct me, John, in the 90s, when they released them to the theater, those were the special editions, if I'm not mistaken, right? So they had the added stuff. And then what I look forward to the most growing up, also, John, you'll probably remember this, USA Network would do a Star Wars like weekend or something once in a great while. And I would watch it every time. So USA would just do Star Wars like Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday, whatever. And I would always watch it. It was my favorite thing. And then, you know, the rest is history with Star Wars. But yeah, that was me growing up. These are my two favorite of the original trilogy. Yeah.
As for me, I actually grew up with the 1995 VHS trilogy release. And I just remember it wasn't something I watched one each night when I first watched them. I'd watch them. I think it was once the first time I watched A New Hope. And then it was a week or two for Empire Strikes Back. And I remember like I was like on the edge of my seat to watch Return of the Jedi, because I remember I was thinking that there's no way Vader could be Luke's father. And actually, fun fact, before we get into the main topic, George Lucas actually did consult a child psychologist, because he actually wanted to see like how people would respond, particularly children, to Luke being Vader's father. And that conversation is what led to Luke seeing Yoda on Dagobah. Children knew that Yoda wouldn't lie about such a thing. So I thought that was like such like an incredible moment of like when I found out that he was his father, and just like the way that Luke's hero's journey like just concluded in it. To start off though, in terms of the main topic, there's actually been a few quotes, because we should talk about before David Lynch being part of Return of the Jedi, we should talk about the things that went wrong with Empire Strikes Back, because a lot of people forget, but the movie was pretty close to not being released because George Lucas was someone who was outside the studio system. He was actually bankrolling the movie off of the profits from the first Star Wars movie, off of the merchandising. He had a loan from Bank of America, and then the movie went over budget. And because, you know, all these different circumstances, the movie was almost couldn't be made. And Gary Kurtz, this is a very prominent part, he was executive producer for Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, even go as far back as American Graffiti. He was ousted, and that kind of led to George Lucas being a little less challenged for this movie, for Return of the Jedi. But also, at the same time, he was also looking for a very specific type of director. And I think that there's a quote by Mark Hamill that I think is absolutely worth mentioning, because he told a reporter in 1983, he said, "Dave Lynch decided he did not want to do a George Lucas movie. He felt that he couldn't be constantly answering to another producer. George didn't want to restrict someone that original, so that came to an amiable parting of the ways." And I think that is very interesting because I would say out of all the main actors, it seems like George Lucas and Mark Hamill had the most like a real sincere friendship throughout the decades. So I think Mark Hamill's not just saying that. I feel like he understands Lucas very well and his thought process. But did you have any thoughts about the comparison and contrasting of David Lynch from this time compared to George Lucas?
I think there's a lot of factors to keep in mind about, you know, the famous story, of course, is that George Lucas considered David Lynch as a possible director for Return of the Jedi. And I guess there were a number of potential directors in the running. And so the context here is really important. And that is that at this point in David Lynch's career, he'd only made two films, and they were Eraserhead and The Elephant Man. And The Elephant Man, of course, was the film really that put him into the Hollywood spotlight as a major movie director, a true new artiste to come along. Eraserhead was a cult film, and it hadn't broken into the mainstream, but The Elephant Man did. And The Elephant Man is probably the film that put Lynch on Lucas's radar as someone who had this powerful vision and could be someone who might potentially be a good match for Star Wars. And so the story is, of course, that Lucas invited Lynch to, you know, for a brief interview, and they just discussed the potential. I don't think it ever went too far at all. And there is some debate of whether or not, you know, Lucas was really serious about it himself. I think, I will get into more detail for sure, but I think just in terms of Lynch had made The Elephant Man, and I think he was looking. Himself was looking for a major Hollywood production. I think he wanted to break into the mega level of director and movie, to be maybe a Spielberg, to be, you know, to be up there. He was a young guy, and I think that he had some ambitions in that respect. And so he considered the potential of Return of the Jedi, then at the point that point was Revenge of the Jedi, and that didn't work out. But Lynch does go to another major science fiction work right after that, and he is the director of Dune, which comes out, if I'm not mistaken, 18 months after Return of the Jedi. So Lynch was looking at a big studio money-making opportunity, and maybe even potentially being part of a franchise. So I think that was there in him. I think he got it out of his system, but it was there, and I think that's a fact.
I'm glad that you brought that up because I'm thinking of like when he was working on The Elephant Man in particular. I think one of the big factors was that Mel Brooks was someone where he was trying to make these serious films, but he didn't want to be affiliated directly just because he thought it would ward off audiences in one way or another. But I think it's worth mentioning is that Mel Brooks was up to bat every step of the way for Lynch. He would support him from the beginning.
Okay, well, I spent an hour with David Lynch in January.
You did?
Yeah, interviewing him.
Was his button, was he
It
wearing?
was, of course it was. White shirt, enough
Closed,
to hear,
white
black,
shirt, buttoned.
black jacket.
Black
Sure,
jacket.
incredibly nice man. Of course, we talked about The Elephant Man, and of course, you came up.
Yes? Nobody knows that I produced The Elephant
Well,
Man.
this is your chance to
Yes.
tell us what it
Yeah.
was you saw in Eraserhead that you wanted to give him The Elephant Man.
You know what I saw, and that's a very good question, Stuart. What I saw in Eraserhead was symbolism that was not murky, symbolism that was clear. That baby was a monster. It took over the. I saw everything he wanted to say, surrealistically and symbolically, he said very brilliantly, very clearly. And I said, this guy will be a great filmmaker, and I'm going to grab him first, and he's going to direct this script, The Elephant Man. And he came in, he helped rewrite it, he helped on the makeup, and he helped on the beautiful black and white, you know, photography. David Lynch is a bit of a genius. He really is.
And I think that when Lynch, in the case of Dune, he thought that something similar would happen when he would work alongside with Dino De Laurentiis. And from what I understand, it was early on because I know in Room to Dream, David Lynch said Dino De Laurentiis treated him like a son. So when Dino De Laurentiis said that, you know, I get final cut, I think early on Lynch thought, oh no, it'll be fine. But as time has went on, and the scope of the movie, the amount of visual effects, because I think he was in Mexico for at least a year and a half or 2 years, they're just dedicated to this movie. Despite all the problems that he had with that movie, and despite the fact that that movie was like just a bad experience for him. I think that at least it was a start of a new science fiction franchise, if you will. Whereas with Star Wars, there was this unprecedented success where you could only just be set within certain parameters. And George Lucas is someone where he would get more micromanaging as time went on. And this was probably the movie where this was like really starting to like show that. Before Lucas, because he had to drop out of the Directors Guild because of the events we're talking about with Empire Strikes Back, he actually did want Spielberg as his number one choice because Spielberg was someone, he was very passionate about Star Wars. In fact, when they screened the rough cut for the original movie, he was the only one out of the whole room that even liked it. But there was also other people such as Richard Donner, Terry Gilliam, John Carpenter, David Cronenberg, Joe Dante. Actually, one that Lucas wanted was William Fraker, who was a cinematographer on Steven Spielberg's 1941. But he did also do some directing as well. But like, we should probably move on to Richard Marquand, who would end up getting the role of director.
By the time I actually came to shoot Jedi, I knew Star Wars and Empire backwards and forwards. I knew them extremely well. And I liked the apparent naivete and simplicity with which George had made Star Wars. I liked that style very much. I found the slight, possibly over-sophistication of the slightly more filmic, more visual way in which Kirsch told his story a little bit excessive for me, for my tastes. I'm a sentimental, very emotional Welshman with a rather maddening sense of humor. I have a twinkle in my eye, and I think the previous director was a different kind of person with perhaps a deeper sense of gloom or a deeper sense of doom and maybe slightly less sense of humor. George is a different man again with a different kind of an attitude to relationships and so forth. Maybe a little bit more introverted, perhaps a little bit more distant, with maybe therefore a greater sense of action storyline and perhaps less interest in the way that people interact. For me, this film is about friendship and loyalty and trust and self-identification. But don't take it too seriously. Let's have a laugh about it. But when we're going to cry, let's cry. And when we're going to laugh, let's laugh. And I think that's what I guess I brought to this movie. And I like to think that's why I was asked to direct it.
What Lucas liked is that he watched a screen of his of Richard Marquand's Eye of the Needle starring Donald Sutherland. And the things that he was talking about was that he liked how the movie looked. He could tell that he was someone who could work within budget, work concisely. And that was like a big factor. And then meanwhile, like we have someone like Lynch where he's very experimental. Like we have all this behind the scenes footage, especially in The Return, when he talks about how he wants that time. He wants to make things very dreamlike. And I think that if Lucas and Lynch had agreed to it, it would have been a completely different factor. Like these two would have been like at odds. It would have been adversarial. It would have been, for what would end up being a rough production, this would have just been a nightmare for everyone involved, in my opinion.
Yes, I agree. All week I've been thinking about this, about like if Lynch had done this movie, even though I kind of feel like if Lynch were to do any Star Wars movie in a multiverse, you know, Lynchverse would be Empire, because I think he would be able, like, if you think about Cooper and you think about, you know, going in the red room and whatnot, I think with Luke between going the dark and the light, I think it would be very interesting to see what Lynch would have done with that part of the story. I think that would have been cool. Like, I think Lynch taps into that psyche of someone trying to figure out who they are or what direction they should go in. And that would have been really interesting. But with Return of the Jedi, it's really hard to think what Lynch would have done. But I think all that stuff you said with Dune, I think it would have been a shit show for him. And wasn't the original ending, they were going to have Wookiees instead of, it was supposed to be on their planet, that final battle, instead of Ewoks?
Actually, this is one thing that's worth addressing, is that one of the factors of George Lucas at this point was that he was starting to get a little too conscious about toy sales in a lot of cases. And we can argue the merit of that. But I think there's also cost effectiveness and among other things, because I think of like how much material it costs to have like dozens of Wookiees on Kashyyyk rather than like dozens of Ewoks on Endor. And also I don't think it's a coincidence that after Return of the Jedi came out, we had an Ewoks cartoon. We had the Caravan of Courage, an Ewok adventure. We had the Battle for Endor.
Yeah.
And I'm actually someone who actually really actually likes the battle for Endor.
I was a kid. I liked it too. Yeah.
So there's a lot of those things that were starting to come up. Like even there was an interview where Harrison Ford, he was talking about how he was begging George Lucas. He begged Lawrence Kasdan, who came back to write for Return of the Jedi, and Richard Marquand. He was like, I'd want to die. Because initially when Star Wars was a success, Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher signed on for two films, whereas Harrison Ford only signed on for one. And instead of killing Han Solo, George Lucas froze him in carbonite just to give that little glimmer of hope in the event that Han could come back. But Han Solo, or Harrison Ford rather, said that he thought there was no future in dead Han Solo toys.
I don't think there's a way to weave him back into the story. And besides which, as a character, he was not so interesting to me. I thought he should have died in the last one, just to give it some bottom, some George. Didn't think there was any future in dead Han toys.
I think it's very telling that Harrison Ford was very cynical, and even though he was great at playing on Solo, it just wasn't his thing.
I don't know why. In my head, I would really love to see a photo of David Lynch surrounded by a bunch of Ewoks, you know, like behind the scenes footage. I think that would be a great photo, right? Yeah, but like, I don't know, with Lynch in the... This whole week, I've been thinking about, like, what would he done? But, yeah, I mean, I just feel like, I mean, we'll get more into it. But with him working with Lucas, I also, to kind of spear off, there is a thing in Hollywood now where this is very common practice, where they go towards the indie darling, the indie unknown, someone who's had a couple indie films, and they're like, we're going to bring you into this franchise. And it's going to like kickstart your career. And there's a multitude of reasons why they seem to do this a lot. Does it always work out? No. I don't really know. John, you probably would know. I mean, to me, this is kind of like the beginning of that, where they do it all the time now. But to go towards all these smaller directors for your big finale is crazy to me. Because I think Lucas... You know, it's his darling. I know he hated directing, but like it just felt weird when you look back now. It's like him or Spielberg would have been, in my mind, the two people to do it. But it's just weird. It just become very, it's a very common practice now where MCU does it, Disney does it. All these franchises seem to bring in smaller people.
Yeah, a couple of quick things. I definitely agree. Spielberg or Lucas would have been the best choice. And I think the intent had always been to have Spielberg direct, but because of, as Colin said, the Directors Guild issues that happened, all because of the credits on The Empire Strikes Back. But, you know, there's one thing we really need to remember, and that is, I mean, The Empire Strikes Back, people don't think about this at all, but The Empire Strikes Back is the most successful independent film of all time. There was no studio involved in The Empire Strikes Back. It was literally an auteur film. I mean, sort of, because Lucas had his hands on it, but so did Irvin Kershner, the director. So there was a different creative impulses there. But you know, that movie was made without interference for the most part, which is remarkable because the movie made so much money. And no independent film that doesn't have studio influence can succeed like that. But Lucas, it was because Lucas had his own idea. He was gonna own it, and it was gonna be his. And I think Lynch has even said this. Lynch admired that about Lucas. Lynch admired the fact that Lucas was not a Hollywood guy, even though he had the most successful franchise in the world. Lucas, it was not a studio. It was Lucas, and it was all came out of Lucas's head. And I think Lynch really appreciated that. He says, if you watch that YouTube story, and I'm sure many, many people have seen it, where Lynch is at this, he's on stage talking to a crowd, and he's talking about his visit, and he gets a headache, and how, you know, he implies that the idea of Star Wars was making him sick. And I think a lot of people take that away from that interview. But he says in that same interview this is Luke, you know, more power to George. I'm interested in Wookiees, but George Lucas owns, George Lucas created that. No one came in and told him how to do it. And Lynch respected that a lot. And I think Lynch respects Lucas and respects Star Wars. I truly do, because he made it, you know, it came from his heart. It came from his, you know, nobody told him what to do. And that is the ultimate, you know, you know, I think, test for Lynch. But we can get into it. It would have been a disaster, I think. I think because, and more for perhaps Return of the Jedi than any of the, well, Lucas was directing the first one, but Lucas really had his hands on Return of the Jedi. I think he was really micromanaging that film. And I just don't know how Lynch would have survived in that environment. He would have been unhappy from day one. I think they respected one another. They admired one another. They were happy to meet for a little while. And they probably both got the vibe. This isn't going to work.
Actually, though, one thing I did want to mention is that you both brought up that this movie would have been better if Lucas directed it. And the thing is that even Gary Kurtz, who was basically fired after Empire Strikes Back for going over budget and just creative differences, and even someone who's very critical of George Lucas, because it was around that time, I think he was in pre-production, and when he heard that there was going to be another Death Star, or in the case of the script that I read, it was two Death Stars, and also returning to Tatooine, he thought, oh, you know, Star Wars should be somewhere where it was like, we go to different places. Like, I feel like it just Return to Form just wasn't landing for him. And then the Dark Crystal came up, and that was just him, like, finally just saying, I'm out of here.
After Raiders of the Lost Ark had come out in the meantime, I'm in between Empire and Jedi. George wanted to change the script that we'd kind of worked out, or the story idea when the script was being written, to have more action and less resolution of the primary stories. It didn't seem like much of a challenge to do another attack on another Death Star and to do things that we'd already done before, rather than take the story off in a different direction. That was coupled with the fact that Jim Henson, someone I'd worked with back in the Muppet Show days, who I brought in to help with the Yoda development, and Frank Oz ended up actually puppeting Yoda in Empire and Jedi. Jim Henson had this project that he'd been working on for 10 years called The Dark Crystal. And originally he asked me if I'd produce it for him, and I said, well, it'll have to wait until the Star Wars films are finished. And then he came back and said he really wanted to do it now. And that, coupled with the fact that I didn't like where the script was going for Jedi, helped decide me that I would rather work on a new challenge, something that had never been done before. So I did The Dark Crystal. I think George was comfortable not directing Empire, but I think he had in his mind that Star Wars was difficult for him to direct, and he liked the idea of shaping the original plan on how a picture gets made and then handing it off to someone else to direct. But I also think that he envisioned that he could somehow direct by remote control, in a way, by kind of keeping his hand in on telling the director what to do. It didn't work with Kirshner. He didn't like that. And so on Return of the Jedi, he hired Richard Marquand, who he felt was a little more amenable to that approach. And I wasn't around for much of that, except for some of the early days, so I'm not sure how that relationship actually worked out. But some of the production people said that it was Marquand did a perfectly good job, and that George was around more than he was on Empire. I think the elements that were there in the outline were ones that allowed the characters to kind of reach a kind of natural conclusion. There was Han Solo was going to be killed in a raid, and Princess Leia would have to decide in the story to take over the mantle of the leader of her people, or what was left of her people, and therefore go off on her own, really, or was leaving Luke on his own, I suppose, is the best way to put it, to kind of ride off into the sunset like Clint Eastwood does, and to see would happen to his life in the future. It was slightly more bittersweet than what happened. And the fans argue about this all the time. Whether it would have been any better or not is impossible to tell because it wasn't made that way. And it would have been probably less out-and-out heavy-duty action and a little more character developed. That's true. And for those who liked that in Empire, that's what they wanted to see. But for those who liked the original Star Wars, they liked the way Jedi turned out. So that you're always going to get that argument between those groups of fans.
And so Lucas had someone who was not going to challenge him. And then Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote Empire Strikes Back and Raiders of the Lost Ark, he came on begrudgingly. And he kept on saying, he's like, oh, someone's got to die. There's got to be a death. It has to be early on. Actually, John, we were talking about before recording is the Making of Return of the Jedi book. You go through those transcripts of Richard Marquand, George Lucas, and Lawrence Kasdan. It gets adversarial. Like, it's like, it looks like had Richard Marquand not been there, it would have been like a half keystone away from like them coming to fist for it, because there's a period when they were all talking about how to end the movie, like how the Death Star factors into it, Luke's character development. Richard Marquand says, I'm surprised at you guys. You spend a lot of time throwing scorn at each other's ideas. I must say this, that what you have got to get is an agreement. You are in a situation where Luke has won, and therefore there's not really any point in going on with the story. And Kasdan just responds with, it's a wimpy ending, though. And the thing is that I think that if Lynch was there, you know, it's like John, what you're talking about is that Wookiees, like the moment he heard that, he basically just got a migraine, just like kind of on the spot. I don't think he could have been in that situation. Like, especially since when he was doing The Elephant Man, where Mel Brooks was like fighting his battles for him. And even with Dune is that at least Dino De Laurentiis had that false sense of security. So there was at least a period where he probably felt like it would work out. But in the case of with Lynch and, you know, trying to be a, you know, being this rising talent, and then Lucas micromanaging and also just fighting over how to conclude this story, I could see this just being like basically like it, like both Lucas and Lynch's careers would be worse off if this did happen.
That's a good point. And you made this point earlier, too. I think, you know, the big difference between Return of the Jedi and Dune is Return of the Jedi was the end. Return of the Jedi was the cap to the trilogy. And Dune was supposed to be the opening. It was supposed to be the first chapter in what they hoped would be a franchise. And in fact, Lynch has said in interviews that he was already scripting the second Dune, that he had plans for the second Dune. I think they all thought it was going to be a big hit. I don't know how far it, let's just say for speculation's sake, it went further, that Lynch was like, yeah, I'm interested. I think I want to do this. I don't know how much farther it would have gone. I think once he saw the script, he would have been interested and he would have seen things he could have done with it. And he would have, you know, I can imagine the interior of the Death Star would have been flame, you know, flame in the background and big blasts of steam and mechanisms and, you know, pulsing, vibrating sounds. And it would have been dirty and it would have been, looked like a machine, you know, like a David Lynch factory, which we've seen before. Yes. And that would have been incredible. That would have been great. But I think he never would have got that far. I think he would have looked at it and said, it's just too restricted. It is. And even without Lucas trying to micromanage it or control it, it was the last chapter. It had to kind of come to a conclusion. And that's built in, that you can't really open it up. You can't expand on it. So what would Lynch have done? He would have had to be moving toward an ending. But so he would have been constrained just by the very nature of what the final chapter is. And that would have been, I think, something, you know, Dune allowed him to open it. Maybe I'm going to open this in a new way of telling a science fiction story. Return of the Jedi was closing it. And so that right there, so if he got a step further, he got into pre-production discussions, I think he probably would have realized, there's not opportunity here for me.
This is a good segue to go into the June 1981 script, because as I was reading it, there are a lot of little things that made me think that there's stuff that would have clicked with Lynch. Because John, you were talking about how, you know, like an Imperial facility would have been, like, had that grittiness. It would have been like there had been fire. The thing is that in this script, It started off on, it would have been a combination of what we see in Coruscant, the city planet in the prequels, as well as Mustafar in the prequels. It's a planet called Hat Abaddon. It's the imperial capital that's polluted. And the thing is that once you go down to the bottom, it's like just like this giant lava pit. And that's where Luke would have fought Vader, would have confronted the Emperor. This is one of the weaker parts of the script, but Obi-Wan would have been there back in the flesh. Yoda would have been there supporting one way or another. And so I think there's something about the way Lynch, how he's always gravitated towards fire and that like dark industrial aspect. I always took it as like his time in Philadelphia, for example, you know, like after like all the riots and just how rough it was, that this would have been like one of those things that would have carried over and some that he might have gravitated to. And also, I guess, and we see this with Jeffrey Beaumont, Blue Velvet, and we see it with Cooper, you know, in the original series, definitely in The Return, of like there's that good Cooper and then there's that bad Cooper. And the thing is that Luke would be very susceptible to turn to the dark side. And even the script, there's actually infighting with Vader and the Emperor because there's a character girl called Grand Moff Jer Jarrad, who's in the movie, who is in Return of the Jedi, but he's very one-dimensional. He's the first Imperial officer that we see when he greets Vader. But in the script, he would have been a loyalist to the Emperor. It would have been those two plotting against Vader of basically just keep him away, that the Emperor would seduce Luke in his own way. And there's all these different factors. And there's that something about the way that Vader responds to the infighting. Like, he knows that they're just trying to keep him busy because Vader, even though he's evil, there's a certain vulnerability that's chipping away at him where it's like he wants Luke to join him as father and son, almost like trying to right the wrong ways, but in a very skewed perspective. And there's just like a lot of things like that that I thought, even though this script that I read is not very good, that there is stuff that I think Lynch would have at least respected.
Yeah, that's a great point. You make me think, you know, maybe I take back a little bit of what I just said, is that Lynch wouldn't have gone much further, because one wonders if Lynch would have embraced some of these ideas and then pushed Lucas forward on some of them and potentially become... it's possible could have become a co-writer or, you know, added, because you're right. And it's true. It's true. We've talked about this for decades, that Star Wars and Twin Peaks do share a very fundamental theme, which is the idea of we have a good side and a bad side. And we have, you know, we can succumb to our dark side and we must, find balance. And those are the same exact themes in Twin Peaks. They're in Star Wars and they're in Twin Peaks. And I do think you're right. I do think that Lynch might have run with some of those ideas. And maybe, and you know, this is just fun speculation, maybe it would have lit a fire under Lucas. You know, maybe he would have been like, you know what, this is cool. Yeah, let's go this way. I tend to think not, because of some other things we've said, that Lucas was not taking as many chances with Return of the Jedi as, or maybe, I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, but I think The Empire Strikes Back got away from him a little. I think Kirshner, you know, was able to do a few things that maybe Lucas didn't like. And so Lucas wasn't going to allow that to happen in Return of the Jedi. But it's fun to think that maybe, you know, a Lucas-Lynch collaboration might have ended up with some fascinating visuals and ideas.
I guess one of the other factors of the whole good and evil inside of all of us, I don't know if I'm reading too far in the symbology of it. I should mention is that everything with the rescuing Han Solo from Jabba, without Leia being there, it's all relatively similar. But Luke gets kidnapped like before, like he leaves Tatooine. And the thing is that when he's kidnapped, he doesn't have his lightsaber. So when he fights Vader, he force takes Vader's lightsaber. And the Emperor, I don't know what it looked like, but he has a lightsaber that he just throws to Vader. And so it's like Luke and Vader fighting with red lightsabers. And I kind of wonder if like there would have been a symbology of like Luke being dangerously close to the dark side. In the script, he doesn't. Like, he is victorious. Like, he's, it's different, but Vader sacrifices himself to, he kills himself and the Emperor in the molten lava. And Luke and Ben Kenobi, they walk and they reflect on what Anakin's fate will be. But I think there's something about being around that lava and fire, and then the fact that there's two red lightsabers, that there is something to that, the evil that like they're both dealing with.
Yeah, I agree for sure.
I guess one thing we should mention is that Ewoks still would have been in this. If Lynch was getting a migraine over the Wookiees, I can only imagine what it would have been like if he had to deal with the Ewoks and the parameters that would have been set. Because, no, it's still just as campy as we get in the final movie, because even though we were talking about the darker thematic elements of Return of the Jedi, I should mention is that there is a similar enough scene like in Return of the Jedi where one of the Ewoks hijacks one of the Scout Trooper speeder bikes, and it still has that silly chase where it's like the Ewok is like, you know, he's flying off and most of the Scout Troopers chase after him. I guess I should put as a side note is that I liked the scene when I was a kid, but every time I revisit, I was like, okay, even the realm of stars and space fantasy, this is a little too ridiculous. I could see Lynch just being like, no, I can't do this. Like, I'm not going to film this or film it his own way. But anyways, like, now that we're on the lighter parts of Return of the Jedi, do you think that Lynch would have come through with it? Or do you think he would have like had a compromise with Lucas? Or do you think Lucas would have just effectively taken over directing at that point?
Just to rewind a little bit. Kid who saw that, I love the Wookiees, the Ewoks. Now, John, I'm interested just to talk about this one point. I know as a kid who saw it, very different. I know when the movie came out, you were 18, 19. Now, I know there was backlash when that movie came out because of the Ewoks. I know the Ewoks weren't loved by everybody. And that's correct, right? I mean, were you someone who kind of did not like the Ewoks or you didn't care or...
That's great. It's a great story. So I was, let's see, like I said, I was 13 when Star Wars came out, and I was 19 when Return of the Jedi came out. It was the end of my freshman year of college, and my roommate hated the Ewoks. I mean, he was just like, this is childish, you know? And I was such a Star Wars fan that I just didn't matter. I was like, you know what? I love Star Wars. And so why not? The Ewoks, you know, they're interesting little characters. I still like Ewoks. I don't dislike Ewoks. And I like the idea of them sort of being, again, that idea that the Empire just didn't, you know, count on this unexpected force. They discounted. They wouldn't be anything to deal with. You know, there's primitive rocks and sticks, and they take out, you know, they take out the stormtroopers. I like all of that. So, yeah, but I do recall that, you know, that the Ewoks didn't go over as well. I will tell you, and I have said this to people, up until very recently, I had a bias about Star Wars. I'd go watch Star Wars and I accepted it. I didn't have any I couldn't critique it. That has changed. That has changed in the last 4 or 5 years. I do critique Star Wars now. Some of the later stuff that's come out, I have a lot of trouble with it and problem with it. But then I didn't care. I loved it. So, but you're right. You're right. Ewoks were embraced by some. You know, one thing you've got to remember, though. I mean, and Lucas has said this before. He was making these films for all ages. He didn't want to push away. He didn't want to make it something that wasn't family, too dark. It wasn't family friendly. Mm. I mean, these were G-rated films. And so he wanted kids to love it and be part of it. And I think that was deliberate. And I think that's part of why the Ewoks were there, not just because it was great toys, but also because young children would delight in it. And I think that's important.
Like, it's great to hear from someone who, you know, lived through that, because as a kid, I loved it. And I've never had a problem with the Ewoks growing up or even now when I rewatch them. But to go back to the Lynch question real quick, a part of me wants to feel if Lynch had done this movie and he actually directed it and we got to that point in the story, I think the Ewoks might have been a little hard pill to swallow for Lynch. I do feel that he might have went in a different, he would have tried to go in a different, darker direction, maybe not have the Ewoks involved at all. But at the same time, John, you hit upon it, and Colin, about how this is the ending. There's no room. There's no time to create new things or go in a different direction. You got to end it. And if Lucas, you know, Lucas is, this is his baby. So I kind of feel there would have been, there probably would have butted heads about the ending and how this was going to wrap up. And ultimately, it's Lucas's baby. So I kind of feel like that could have drove, you know, if they have a friendship, it kind of killed a friendship there, you know, them butting heads over something like that. So I don't know. It's really hard for me to imagine Lynch doing something with Ewoks, even though I'd love to see that photo of Lynch surrounded by little Ewoks. Anyway, that's my thought.
This is more so comparing and contrasting Lynch to Richard Marquand, is that when Richard Marquand first met George Lucas, he actually showed up to George Lucas' house, and where they really started to get along is that they were talking about politics, they were talking about history. And the reason why I bring this up is that with the Ewoks, they were an allegory for the Viet Cong, where it's like, you know, how can these people with like primitive weapons take on like this massive army? And I think the allegory sticks very well. I think the fact that because they're tiny, it works out.
It isn't the science, aliens, and all that kind of stuff that I get focused on. It's the how do the people react to all those things? And yeah. How do they accommodate them?
Yeah.
So that's the part that really fascinates me and I'm interested in.
You did something very interesting with Star Wars, if you think about it. The good guys are the rebels. They're using asymmetric warfare against a highly organized empire. I think we call those guys terrorists today. We call them Mujahideen, we call them Al-Qaeda.
When I did it, they were Viet Cong.
Exactly. So were you thinking of that at the time?
Yes.
So it was a very anti-authoritarian, very kind of 60s against the man kind of thing, nested or, deep inside a fantasy.
Or a colonial, you know, we're fighting the largest empire in the world.
Right.
And we're just a bunch of hayseeds in coonskin hats that don't know nothing.
That's right.
And it was the same thing with the Vietnamese.
Yep.
The irony of that one is in both of those, the little guys won.
Right.
And the big, highly technical empire.
The English Empire. Right?
English Empire, the American Empire, lost.
Yeah.
That was the whole point.
But that's a classic us not profiting from the lesson of history, because you look at the inception of this country, and it's a very noble fight of the underdog against the massive empire. You look at the situation now, where America is so proud of being the biggest economy, the most powerful military force on the planet, it's become the empire. From the perspective of a lot of people around the world.
It was the empire during the Vietnam War. And what we never learned, you know, from England or Rome or, you know, a dozen other empires
that
went on for hundreds of years or sometimes thousands of years, we never got it. We never said, well, wait, this isn't the right thing to do. And we're still struggling with it.
And they fall because of failure of leadership or government often. And,
mostly,
you know, you have a great line, which is, so this is how liberty dies.
We're in the middle of it right now.
To thunderous applause. Exactly. It was a condemnation of populism in a science fiction context.
That's a theme that runs all the way through Star Wars.
I mean, I was a little headstrong about how I felt about the speeder bike scene, but I actually do like the Ewoks outside of that. And I guess if we're talking about the flaws of Return of the Jedi, and I know people always like, you know, it seems like the consensus that everyone loves the Luke Skywalker arc where the hero's journey is finally completed. His scenes with Vader are like among my favorite in the whole trilogy. Mm-hmm. I will say is that I think that while people dwell on stuff like a second Death Star, I actually find that to be accidentally genius, because when I think of that scene, I think of how the Emperor, how like what would be the one thing to unite all the Rebel Alliance and just destroy them in one swift stroke. A second Death Star would be it, and claiming it's inactive. So I actually am totally on board with a second Death Star, but my problems with Return of the Jedi, and this is where it's going to tie back into Lynch, is that Harrison Ford, he was phoning in at this point. Like, you can kind of tell he just looks like he's very passive there. I mean, even if you watch the scene when the Ewoks emerge, like, Mark Hamill, he can barely contain laughing as C-3PO is talking. Harrison Ford just looks like he wants to be anywhere else in the world. Anyone who's read Carrie Fisher's Wishful Drinking will know that she was going through serious drug problems around this time. And it just seemed like the connection that she had with definitely Han and Leia, that were like, you know, they had such an explosive chemistry in those first two movies. And there's just some that just seems off in Return of the Jedi for me. You know, for as much as I love Luke Skywalker's arc, and I love the fact that Mark Hamill like put his heart into it, having Harrison Ford, you know, just being disinterested, and then also Carrie Fisher, she's going through serious drug problems, I think that Lynch wouldn't have been able to handle that particularly well. Because, no, I'm thinking of, like, for example, on The Elephant Man, John Hurt was a saint from day one. And then meanwhile, he had someone like Anthony Hopkins who would get very adversarial with him. Mm. But it was really just one particular person. And I think that at least Lynch respected the work he put in. But I think that with Harrison Ford in particular, just being disinterested and just sort of like, you know, I think everyone knows that Harrison Ford is just kind of like a standoffish guy. I think that would have been way worse than Anthony Hopkins, in my opinion.
It's hard to imagine, but it is and it isn't hard to imagine how Lynch would have worked with those actors, because we do know that a lot of actors find, perhaps even unexpectedly, that they like working with Lynch, because he does sort of allow the actors to kind of find the characters. He doesn't give them a lot of boundary around, you know, he doesn't come in and say it has to be this way. He'll come in and he'll just say, okay, you know, there's a breeze, you know, he will direct with imagery. And impossible to say, but maybe Ford would relax a little and said, oh, you know, this guy's letting me play this character the way I want to play him. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to be this stereotypical one-dimensional, you know, swashbuckling hero. Maybe I can do some other stuff. Who knows? Again, Lucas is overseeing it all, right? So he could be coming in and saying, that's not how it's going to go. But, you know, again, it's all speculation. But how the actors would have worked with Lynch, that's fascinating. It's hard, really hard to because, I think with The Elephant Man, and Anthony Hopkins was already kind of a real established, you know, actor, and Lynch is an unknown, and there were all that dynamic there. But since then, anyone that's worked with Lynch, I think for the most part, has come away going, what a great experience that was. So who knows? Who knows?
One thing I will say, and I think that it would have actually halted production, I think, to a certain degree. But I am honestly curious of like how Lynch would have been in part of like picking the practical effects, picking the creature designs, even puppeteering. I could totally see Lynch just like taking it upon himself to puppet a part of Jabba the Hutt or something like that. Yes. Or making his own version of Salacious Crumb, the little like sidekick that that Jabba the Hutt has. I think that Lynch would have ran absolutely rampant with like everything with all those creatures. He would have had like a little more of like a firm say in terms of like how they look. They're probably been like almost a, like, because Jabba's palace is so dark and dingy that it would have this more grotesque nature, even more than what we see in the movie. But did you ever both have any thoughts of like what he would have added in terms of creature design or any other factors?
Yeah, definitely. I'm just sorry to jump right in, but I wrote a piece for Wrapped in Plastic a long, long time ago, which was what if Lynch had directed Return of the Jedi. It was only one page. I think it was in issue 28. Believe it or not, I can remember that. And I remember distinctly saying that Jabba the Hutt was supposed to be gross in Return of the Jedi. He's not really gross. He's sort of gross, right? But he's not. He looks like a giant Muppet. And for the time, it was a remarkable thing to see on screen that they had sort of a practical effect. They had created this giant creature, and they had all kinds of people working him under, you know, and behind. But I think if Lynch had had his way, think of Baron Harkonnen from Dune, the way Lynch portrays the Baron in Dune with all the oozing pustules on his face, and he is gross. He is repulsive. You don't want to look at him. That would have been a little more, if he'd had his way, if he'd been given some free rein, Jabba would have been disgusting. Jabba would have been just, he would have had oozing, you know, open wounds, and he would have just been, you know, just really ugly. And I think Lynch would have loved that. I think Lynch would have just like, wow, this is a great thing to play with, and had fun doing some of that. But again, you know, if he'd had his way, we would have seen some fascinating visuals, but who knows how much control he would have had.
I guess one thing that should be mentioned is that the Rancor was originally supposed to be like a guy in a suit, like not unlike Godzilla. And I kind of wonder what would have been like, because I know that at least when Richard Marquand was working on it, he was, I think it was like almost like an 11th hour thing of like, oh, this suit isn't going to look good. Like, you know, it's not going to look good with like picking up Mark Hamill or there's all these other factors. But I kind of wonder if Lynch would have just discarded that entire character design, be like, that's it. Like, and got on his hands and knees to make his own thing, because even the Return, like when he was making like, you know, Philip Jeffries, he was really on his hands and knees. Like he, you know, most other directors would just hand that off to someone else, but Lynch is someone then and now, someone who like, who will get down the nitty gritty. So I think that, like, if he was inspired by a creature design, he would have been very passionate about making it in a certain vision, and probably would have, like, even against the grain with George Lucas. And I guess I should mention, I know I mentioned this previously, but the toy sales were admittedly reverse engineering Return of the Jedi in a lot of cases, because, for example, there's the Rebel officer, General Mae Dean. He's one of the guys in the Rebel briefing room. He actually didn't have any facial hair, but they had to put on, like, a fake beard for him because they already made the toy. And, like, well, you know, we made the toy, so you have to have this. And by the way, I didn't realize how truly fake that beard was until I saw the 40th anniversary release earlier this year. So it's not as bad as the Sleepaway Camp facial hair, but it is really rough.
Star Wars, the impact is staggering. Never in the history of motion pictures has one film been so popular. But the craze did not stop at the box office. In 1977, Kenner launched the Star Wars collection with a massive advertising blitz. And thanks to your efforts and faith in the Force, the response has shot sales right off the ground.
I think they were totally unprepared for the magnitude of the success and how sudden it hit them and how rapidly they had to convert from a sort of small-time toy company to one of the major players.
For Empire, they were a little more prepared. They had the figures ready, actually, even before the film was out. But they were still fairly conservative. No one had bet on a sequel before. People were like, well, I'm not sure about this. Return of the Jedi, they were ready. They had a massive lineup of action figures, lots of vehicles, lots of toys planned. Even if it was a horrible film, they knew it was going to do very well. But really, it took them even till about 83 to really get... build up the momentum. No one knew what they were doing yet. It was the first time this had been done.
Star Wars unfortunately set off an unfortunate chain of dominoes where Kenner went from this little charming toy company to like this big kind of entertainment related company that had a corporate face to it and was kind of less fun, I guess. It became less fun.
Star Wars had an enormous impact on not just the bottom line, but the culture per se.
So I kind of wonder if that would have been like another factor of Lynch and Lucas just like clashing, where it's like, you know, this stuff is already made, or, you know, it's already, you know, it's lined up and ready to go. And Lynch just saying like, you know, who cares? Like, this is the way it should be. Like I said, I think that in the hypothetical event these two were together, I think it would have been worse off for both of their careers, because, you know, at least with Lynch, Dune was like an absolute nightmare to work on. But at least he could negotiate to do Blue Velvet, and he would subsequently find his footing as an auteur and someone who's very much his own person. Yeah. And Lucas, on the other end, you know, it's like he was, in the case of Star Wars, he originally was going to have episodes 7, 8, and 9. But after everything with Empire Strikes Back and knowing how rough Return of the Jedi was going to be, he's like, that's it. I'm just going to end it. We're going to throw the sister in. Leia's going to be the sister. We're closing off all the gaps. So, and I think that if like Return of the Jedi, if it ended up being just like either lukewarm or even just like bad press of sorts, I think it would have just derailed both of their careers.
No, yeah, I mean, I think it would have derailed Lynch's career more than Lucas, unfortunately. I think if Lynch had done it and they butted heads and maybe the film didn't do so well, or maybe it got panned a little bit because of Lynch would have been the one being blamed. Not Lucas, no matter what. It's always the director. You know what I'm saying? Even though if he didn't write it, it's the director. So I kind of feel like Lynch would have really... He probably would have came back eventually with his own stuff, but I feel like there would have been a dent in his career at that point. It might have been a little bit harder for him to do anything. There's examples now where, you know, I'm not saying this would have happened because Hollywood's very different, obviously, with very different things are happening now, but like you have smaller directors who've done bigger franchises and they've failed or they bombed, and those directors don't work, or they can't get those bigger projects done because they failed at the box office. So I kind of feel like Lynch would have I think he would have been the one who taken the brunt for anything negative about that film if he had done it.
Well, that's a great point, because I think it's so much fun to think about what the alternate realities might have been. And I do agree that if Return of the Jedi did not live up, I mean, even if it had been a good movie, if it had not lived up to the hype and the hope, Lynch would have been the one who got blamed for it, and it would have derailed his career. And the thing about Dune is there's two really important things, I think.
Sure.
One is he tried to make this big studio franchise film, and it didn't work. Now, there are a lot of reasons why. I think one of the main reasons why is he's just not suited to that. He's not suited to science fiction. He's not suited to adapting a work that was already so well-known, the Frank Herbert Dune. The other major factor, of course, is the De Laurentiis micromanaging that, keeping the cut at a certain length, and you know, really restraining Lynch. But because he had a fairly good relationship with the De Laurentiis, and because they'd made a deal for Blue Velvet, Dune allowed him to make Blue Velvet the final cut, the Blue Velvet he wanted to make. And so Dune kind of led him to Blue Velvet, which reset Lynch in the popular culture. I mean, yes, Twin Peaks is going to put him in more public view than anything else, but Blue Velvet, that's the thing that, that established Lynch as a unique, powerful artist, a director unlike almost anyone else out there. That Blue Velvet outcome would not have happened if he had made Return of the Jedi. Now, you know, Return of the Jedi was going to be a hit no matter what. It was going to make a ton of money no matter what. So maybe someone comes to Lynch and says, we want you to make another movie because you made Return of the Jedi, even if it wasn't as well received. He wouldn't have had that final cut power over that film like he did with Blue Velvet. So I think Dune was a really good thing to happen to Lynch. I really believe that. I'm glad it didn't succeed the way they had hoped it would, because then he would have made Dune 2, and who knows what would have happened. But he made Blue Velvet, and that we're all happy, because Blue Velvet led to Twin Peaks, and we all know what happens after that. So it's hard to know what his career would have been like with whether Return of the Jedi had been a success or less of a success than expected. Hard to know whether Lynch would have been able to achieve the things that satisfied him.
I guess the last thing I'll say, just because we've all talked about Twin Peaks in such detail, I guess the one thing I was thinking of, because Brian, you mentioned how David Lynch would have been like great on some like Empire Strikes Back, because Lucas was more hands-off. You know, he let Irvin Kershner do his own thing, and you know, and Irvin Kershner was kind of going his own pace as well. But one thing I was thinking of, it was actually when I first read Conversations with Mark Frost, it's when he was talking about how much Joseph Campbell's work was like an inspiration for him in his like young adult life. And I think that him and George Lucas would have been on the same page, because, you know, Lucas is on record saying that Joseph Campbell is like the inspiration for what led to Star Wars. And even later on, full circle, it was in 1987 when Bill Moyers on PBS did an interview with Joseph Campbell, and he said that Star Wars, the original trilogy at large, is what reignited the hero's journey, and him and Lucas became very good friends.
Do you see some new metaphors emerging in the modern medium for the old universal truths that you've talked about, the old story?
I think that the Star Wars is a valid mythological perspective, and the problem of is the machine, and the state is a machine. Is the machine going to crush humanity or serve humanity? And humanity comes not from the machine, but from the heart. I think it was in the Return of the Jedi when Skywalker unmasks his father. The father had been playing one of these machine roles, a state role. He was the uniform, you know? And the removal of that mask was an undeveloped man there. It was kind of a worm. By being executive of a system, one is not developing one's humanity. I think that George Lucas really, really did a beautiful thing there.
And later on, Lucas, in 1999, he'd do an interview again with Bill Moyers, and he'd be talking about, like, you know, the mythology of Star Wars and how it permeated culture. So I think that, you know, hypothetically, if Mark Frost wasn't working on just TV, and the thing is that he's also very invested in politics, and it seems like him and Lucas align, like, well enough. I think that if Mark Frost probably would have actually been on the same page with Lucas if he was there strictly for the writing process. Like, there would have been no fighting with Lawrence Kasdan, no directors in the middle of, like, having to, like, talk it out, be a mediator. I don't know. I know I'm throwing in another hypothetical as we're winding down, but I figured I'd put it out there just because of how much we've all talked about Twin Peaks for some time.
You know, this would have been a crazy impossibility because Frost was not a known factor, but Frost's not a bad director. He would have been the perfect director for Return of the Jedi because he would have understood what his role was, and he would have embraced the ideas of Lucas, and he's a good director. Mark Frost is. He wasn't an established. He hadn't directed anything, I don't think, by then. And so he never would have been in the running for it. But I do think part of the reason why Richard Marquand was picked, and this is in any way, I'm not trying to slight Frost in any way, that I think Richard Marquand was someone who was going to follow what Lucas needed to have done. Lucas was responding to what happened on Empire Strikes Back when he went with Marquand, I think. So a crazy, crazy thought, but I would love to see Mark Frost involved in any way. I think he would have really flourished in that environment.
I absolutely agree. I guess that kind of sums up everything. Was there any final thoughts we should have before we finish up our long hypothetical of Lynch if he were to direct for Return of the Jedi?
You know, I think I've said everything. Most of what I can think of about Lynch's involvement. I will return briefly, if you don't mind. We talked about, you talked about, Colin, some of the reasons why Return of the Jedi just didn't quite click the same way as the previous two films. You talk about Carrie Fisher had some problems. Harrison Ford wasn't really into it. Maybe Lucas is micromanaging. Maybe the toys are driving it. You know, there's a lot of factors. And I do remember going to see Return of the Jedi in 1983. I stood in line for 6 hours to see it. I got up at 7 a.m. and drove an hour to the theater that was showing it. And I stood in line, got interviewed by the local newspaper, you know, why are you here? And all that stuff. But I do remember the slightest bit of disappointment. Again, I love Star Wars. And I will tell you one of the things that really took me out of the film. And I don't know if you guys know about it. I'm sure you've acknowledged it when you've watched it. But there is a scene at the end, near the end, where on Endor, when Chewbacca has to swing on a vine. I think he swings either from or over to the scout walker, and he does the Tarzan yell. And I remember going, oh, no. That took me right out of the story. The Tarzan yell does not belong there. That's an overt acknowledgement of something outside of Star Wars. It's parodying itself now. Mm. It is no longer within the realm of the make-believe. Hey, I know there's an audience out there who's going to get this non-contextual joke. I'm going to throw it in there. And I remember being disappointed. I remember thinking, well, they don't care about it as much as they used to.
Interesting. Wow. That's interesting to hear. I don't know if it bothers that something like that bothered me. I can't say I have something a similar story. So obviously this is not the original movies. The prequels came out, and I remember following everything on StarWars.com and the trickle down of just any little bit of things, and then seeing the trailer. But like, I saw episode one, I was in denial because I was like, oh, it's great. And I saw it 3 times that weekend, and I saw it midnight. I saw it the next day. And then I saw it twice on Saturday, midnight, the first showing on Thursday night or whatever night it was. And then like later on, I'm like, yeah, I was so in the hype. I was so into it. I worked at KB Toys at the time. So I spent my entire paycheck on episode one toys, you know, Darth Maul and all that stuff. And I've come to appreciate it. I've watched the prequels, you know, it's my least favorite of the prequels. Definitely. There are parts that I do like, but after a while I was like, am I just fooling myself? What am I doing here? I mean, it wasn't like, I was just like in the hype, and I love Star Wars, and I was so excited for it, and we were all excited for it together. So looking back now, I'm like, I feel like I was just wrapped up in that hype.
I think that kind of wraps up everything. I guess before we leave off, do you both have any social media or anything you'd like to plug before we sign off?
Well, I'm just, you know, I've got my Twin Peaks books out there. Some people know about them. They can go look up on Amazon, like, you know, Ominous Whoosh and Essential Wrapped in Plastic. I'm writing. I don't have anything to promote them, but I should have someday another book. I'm working on Mulholland Drive. Ooh. I've been working hard last 5 months. And so someday there'll be a Mulholland Drive book. Stay tuned.
That's awesome, John. I'm excited. I'm excited. So we'll have to have you on Twin Peaks Unwrapped. I am not on Twitter anymore. This is a big update. So I doubt anybody's even noticed, but our Twin Peaks Unwrapped Facebook page has disappeared. Not because we deleted it, but for some strange reason, Facebook sent Ben and me saying that we went against their guidelines. And we cannot figure out what we did. We both put in a thing saying, you know, this is a mistake. We don't know what happened. Can we get our page back? And we've been in limbo for about a couple months now. So Twin Peaks Unwrapped on our Facebook page on Facebook does not exist right now because we're at the mercy of AI. I don't know what happened.
Once there was another Twin Peaks page that was pulled down because Facebook thought they were infringing on a copyright, or I don't even know. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's very weird. So, I mean, I'm personally on Facebook. That's pretty much it. And Twin Peaks Unwrapped, our book is out. It's on Amazon. And Twin Peaks Unwrapped still exists on Twitter. Ben runs that. And unfortunately, I'm just waiting for Facebook to give us back our page.
So are either going to go up to Snoqualmie for the Twin Peaks days at the end of February?
I am definitely lined up for it. Nothing booked yet, but I am absolutely hoping that I can make it up to Twin Peaks Day in February.
Yeah, I am planning. I don't have any plane reservations yet or anything, but I've already agreed to be on panels, so I'm going to have to be there.
Yeah, I think that that sums up everything. I just want to thank you both for coming on. I know this is like a different type of episode.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.